The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
Pointing You Home with Eric Stewart on WMAL.
Pointing You Home.
Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Good morning, DMV. Welcome to Pointing You Home, your number one local real estate news resource. Coming up, we have community news, a quick tip about real estate, and then I'll discuss some great houses on the market in the area. And if you're so inclined, I'd like you to stick around and join me at 8:30. We have Senior Solutions. It's just a great little radio show built with seniors and their children in mind. Do you know what an olderpreneur is? 8:30, I'll tell you all about it. Let's jump into local news that matters to you. Hey, this weekend, the winery at Bull Run is expanding. It's investing $1.7 million on doubling its production. The winery got a state's grant of $100,000, and Fairfax County has matched that. The expansion will open up 37 new jobs in the county. That's the winery at Bull Run. If you're looking for a job, you may want to knock on their door. Did you know there are over 300 wineries and cideries in the state of Virginia? My good friend Luca Paschina runs the Barbersville Winery, which is very fine in Charlottesville. I definitely recommend the Octagon if you've never tried it. Friends of the National Zoo is hosting Zoo Uncorked on September 13th, speaking of wine. Get ready for the wildest wine tasting in town at the Zoo Uncorked, sponsored by Total Wine and More, on September 13th at the Smithsonian's National Zoo. Raise your glass or Rorse, I guess, for conservation, and enjoy wine tastings from local and national wineries and vineyards in the beautiful setting of the zoo. Tickets, by the way, are only $55 to $115 with options for sober driver tickets, okay?
Watching me, oh, baby, do the stupidity.
Hey, air pollution. Is air pollution making us dumber? You know, the idea that you breathe in pollution, whether you're driving through a construction area or you're driving down 66 with your windows open, do these things affect our ability? Well, apparently so. Apparently, pollution does cause us to not think as clearly. Just like the smoke in California, if you've seen the fires out recently, people in California have been complaining that they get the feeling that they're smokers. In fact, it's very similar because there's a haze and there's a constant amount of carbon monoxide in the air from the burning of the trees. That impact on how people think and how clearly they think is pretty strong. So be aware of that. And in our area, fortunately, we've seen a lot of change in pollution in the Washington, D.C. area. We still get affected, though, sometimes from pollution from other states that blow into our area.
I wish we weren't here, but this is a change we need.
Howard County Executive Alan Kittleman says they have to knock down the buildings to create a wider and deeper channel for the river to flow downhill. Sally Tennant owns one of the buildings. She's lived and operated a business there for 40 years.
For me to walk away from all that, it's asking a lot.
She says so far the county hasn't offered her enough money for the building, but negotiations are ongoing. On Main Street, Ellicott City, Heather Curtis, on WMAL and WMAL.com.
10 buildings in Ellicott City Main Street coming down. You remember, Ellicott City had, in just 2.5 years, had 2,000-year storms. We talked about this just a few weeks ago, the amount of water that goes through Ellicott City. I'm sure this was very, very tough for those residents and business owners in Ellicott City. I do wish you well. I hope that Ellicott City recovers and thrives and that the distribution of water is corrected in a way that everybody is served well by. Arlington Food Assistance Center invites the public to celebrate Hunger Action Month. The month of September, even though Arlington has one of the highest median household incomes in the country, hunger affects large vulnerable populations within our county's borders. Over 2,300 families need something from Arlington Food Assistance Center each week. So definitely appreciate what they're doing. Be mindful as you're thinking about ways to serve and volunteer as we move into October, November. Think about volunteering to help others in need.
Ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no valley low.
In a few minutes, I'm going to tell you a story about my climb on Mount Rainier. I climbed Mount Rainier back in July of this summer. I also did some backpacking on the Olympic Beach in Washington State. And I want to tell you a story about my summit attempt, what happened, and how it relates to real estate. There's a wonderful property that we have put on the market in Northern Virginia that was on the market back in February of this year. You probably remember the house. I told you the story about 11703 Vale Road. I showed up just a couple of days before settlement back in the first week of March. A windstorm had knocked a massive 80 to 90 foot oak tree down on the lawn and down across the back of the house, crushing the roof, pulling the back of the house back away from the house. So it actually had folded the back wall, you know, glass everywhere, a lot of damage, and a giant tree root. 6 months later, the seller had a contractor come in, all covered by insurance and rebuilt, and now has presented the home back to the market at last at the same list price, $700,000. This is a mid-century modern split-level home with a two-car garage and a nice big lot. Beautiful trees, convenient but quiet. Consider that if you're thinking about buying a home, take a look at 11703 Vale Road. And down in Alexandria, 6003 Climb Hill Road is on the market for $375,000. If you're an investor looking for a single-family home, split level, with three bedrooms, one and a half baths, and a house that does need to be worked on, folks, no question about that, but it's fresh on the inside, fresh paint, it's got hardwood floors, brick construction on the outside, and a nice big level backyard. It sits on the perch of a hill with nice east-west exposure. House is listed for only $375,000, just went on the market. Take a look at ericstewartgroup.com if you want more information. We've mentioned that we're having seminars in October. I want to invite you today to register at ericstewartgroup.com for our seminar October 16th in Maryland and in 17th in Virginia. We're hosting two seminars each day. One is how to age in your best place. The other one is how to sell your home for top dollar. As you're thinking about getting ready to sell in the spring of 2019, 20, or 21, I invite you to attend this lecture. This lecture on how to sell for top dollar, I'll bring you information on how you can approach selling to get the best rate of return on improvements you think about making to the inside of your house. Sometimes my sellers have put money where they're not going to make money. I remember joking with my previous broker, the broker who owned the company, Llewellyn Realtors, before he sold it to Long & Foster about 5 years ago. And he used to tell the story about a guy who was very sure about the value of his property. Why? He said, because I've got 6-inch walls. And I've got extra heavy-duty nails. Now, I know the quality of the construction. You can sell the value of that construction. But the reality is buyers, they don't pay a lot of attention to how wide the walls are or the quality and the number of nails that you might use in construction. Point being that there are things you can do which don't have the same pizzazz and sellability as, say, new tile on the kitchen floor, new granite countertops, or quartz countertops. You follow what I'm saying. You know, recently we had a sale that worked out so well for our seller because we were able to generate a multiple contract scenario for the property, even in a slower market. We were able to sell the property. We had three offers on a home that needed a tremendous amount of work. It needed a good $80,000 of effort. Now, the seller chose to sell the property as is. That was very good approach in this particular circumstance. Why? Because they could have spent $30,000 to $40,000 of working on the house, but frankly, it would have been putting Band-Aids on issues in the house to make it look better, but you still would have had major issues behind the scenes that we would have had to disclose. Better to put everything in the hands of a buyer who can do it all the way that they want to. I have a couple who've just hired me to sell their home. This is in Bethesda, Maryland, and this is not far from the Whole Foods and where the White Flint Mall used to be. And the couple have been in their home for about 28 years now, retired, moving out of state. And as I sat with them and we were getting ready to get, we went through all the disclosures, we went through all the proper paperwork, and we got to the very end, just to the point where they're ready to sign the listing agreement. Well, here's the situation. I've got two sellers, and I've got one who really wants to sell and just wants to be done with it. And I've got another seller who wants to sell but wants to get the most money. Now, this is a couple, and they're married, but they have a dividing point on this issue. And as the real estate agent sitting at the table, I'm presented with a disagreement between the sellers, the husband and the wife. And I have to decide, what am I going to do here in order to get us through the process of getting signature? The issue was the list price. He wanted a different price than she wanted ultimately. You know, I looked her in the eye and I said, "Ma'am, would you please trust me that I will do my very best for you, and that if we need to amend our price, if we need to adjust, that I'll come back to you and your husband with conviction accordingly. But I think that where we're starting now, what we're doing now, is what makes the most sense." And then I was quiet, and I just looked her in the eyes, and she looked me in the eyes, and there was a good quiet, maybe 15, 20 seconds of where she and I are just exchanging that look, where she's making a decision whether she's going to let go and trust me as her broker to guide her. And she said yes, and she could have said no. And so we moved forward, we signed the agreement. Property has just gone on the market, and I expect that the property will sell quite quickly at its current list price. It's currently being sold as is for $950,000. I definitely encourage you to take a look at 7611 Sugar Bush Lane in North Bethesda. It's a heck of a good buy, and at $950,000, you might say, wow, that's kind of a big price for an as-is sale, but homes in that neighborhood sell for $1,150,000 to $1,200,000. So here again, they made the room to price the house at a price and then wait a week so we could see what kind of offers we get. You follow? You don't want to just put a house on the market and sell it to the first person who shows up. You want to put a house on the market and you want to have multiple contracts, especially if you take an aggressive approach. We ultimately want to sell for the most money with the best terms. That's what you want. That's what my grandfather said to me before he sold his house. "I just want to know you're going to get me the best price and terms." Well, I'll be right back with my Mount Rainier story. I'm Eric Stewart, pointing you home. More to come.
This is Pointing You Home on WMAL. Here's your host, Eric Stewart.
So I climbed Mount Rainier this summer, and it's interesting how all things work out for the best. Now, about 7.5 weeks ago, I found a spot opened up with Rainier Mountaineering out in Washington State to attempt to a summit with them, Mount Rainier, starting July the 23rd. And I quickly grabbed the spot with just really a very brief window there, because the spots, they close up typically in the fall, late fall of the year before, and they don't open. But somebody had dropped out, I signed up, and I was not ready. Now, I spent 4.5 to 5 weeks climbing Old Rag Mountain. If you've ever been down to Old Rag, you know what a great climb that is and how tough it is on the rocks. It's a great climb. Roan Mountain down in Tennessee, Grandfather Mountain, North Carolina. And frankly, I was climbing office buildings here in the D.C. region, 20-story, 21-story office buildings, to carrying 35 to 40 pounds on my back in order to build up my stamina. Mount Rainier is an 8,000-foot climb from the base to the summit, which is at 14,410. It's similar from its base to summit to Mount Everest. In fact, it's a precursor. Many, many mountaineers will go to Mount Rainier to prepare themselves. I'm not saying I'm going to Everest. I'm just saying that's the similarity, although the altitude is not as high. Now, we start the climb one morning about 9 o'clock in the morning, and we climb for 6 to 7 hours up to Camp Muir, which is at 10,000 feet. This is from about 5,000 feet up to about 10,000 feet. That is a very tough climb. You climb about 1,000 feet. You rest for 15 minutes, drink some water, eat a bunch of food. And then when you get to Camp Muir, up at 10,000, you're up. There's only snow at this level. You're way above everything else around you. It's an exceptional view, even from Camp Muir. And you rest. You repack your bag. You put your sleeping bag in. There's a hut, which is essentially just planks of plywood inside of a plywood box that, with two windows at the top that allow cool air to come in, and you and your climbers and your guides all sleep there, or try to sleep there for a few hours. You wake up at 11 o'clock at night. You get your crampons on, your ice axe, your helmet, your spotlight on your helmet, and you start climbing from midnight to dawn in order to try to ascend to Rainier's summit. Now, see, this is really where, the metal really comes in when it comes to climbing, because the first climb is in shorts and t-shirt and you're carrying a backpack and you've got your boots on, but you don't need crampons. You're doing it in typical daylight hours. You're fresh from a good night's sleep. At this point, you're getting up, maybe having put your head down around 6:30 or 7, trying to sleep, but frankly, I didn't sleep, if much at all. And you rest, and you get up, you eat a bunch of food, and you start climbing. From midnight, you climb from midnight till about 1:15 in the morning. You climb 1,000 feet across a field, up a stone rock climb, and over a ledge up onto a new ice field. You rest for 10 to 15 minutes. You start climbing again. Compression breathing is important, which is breathing in a full breath and then breathing out hard. So you're breathing in as much oxygen as possible because the oxygen levels are lower at that level. Climb 1,500 feet over Disappointment Cleaver. Now, cleaver just means there is a section of rock that sits about 1,000 feet high that separates two parts of what are called the Emmons Glacier. So it's a cleaver that actually cleaves this glacier into two pieces. It's a massive climb in its own right. And then after you climb up to the top of that, you continue climbing in snow, and then you finally take a break. Now, before you cross the Emmons Glacier and you go around the shoulder, the Emmons Shoulder, essentially you've got 10, 15 minutes, you pound some water, the guides all come around and ask everybody, can you do this? Can you make this climb? And we've had two or three of the climbers in our group have already bailed at this point because of just exhaustion, lack of stamina. And I'm feeling it, folks. It is nothing but a tremendous exhilaration, but also my legs are feeling it. And just sitting down for 10 minutes to rest, it's like takes everything, all that energy, all that excitement and pounding. You just want to keep going, but you do need to rest. You need to eat and drink water. I start up that next 100 yards after I'm convinced, yes, I can do this. Yes, I will do this. The next 100 yards, I'm slogging it, digging my crampons and my boots into the snow, and I'm making the climb, and I'm following the pace of everybody, but I forget my compression breathing. And about 100 yards in, I'm like, I think I need to stop. I said it just under my breath, just loud enough that I could hear it, but nobody else heard it. After I said it, I was like, what am I saying? No, I don't. And I compression breathed. I caught myself. I started compression breathing and I went. As it would turn out, I had the energy, the focus, and would have gone all the way to the summit. But as we cross the Emmons Glacier, and it's about 4:30 in the morning at this point, we get to the shoulder, which is just a turn on the mountain where you climb up over a shoulder and you start to make your final ascent to the summit, which is at 14,000. We're at 12,600 feet in height here. There's a couple of crevasses that we crossed over. These are giant pits between two sections of a glacier that, you know, the glaciers are these giant snowfields that move slowly down the mountain because of gravity and melting ice during the day, which is why we start climbing at midnight to make our summit attempt because of the melting ice and snow and the chance for rock falls. We get to the shoulder and one of the crevasses had a ladder crossing it that the ladder had fallen from just the night before to that point in time because of settlement. There was no way at 4:30 in the morning that we could put the ladder back into place to cross over that crevasse. So, unfortunately, we were not able to summit the mountain at that time. And it's now, the sun is not up, but it's definitely light at 4:30, 4:45 in the morning. And our whole group is just, you know, we're all, I mean, mildly disappointed, but accepting the fact, hey, safety first, there's nothing we can do. We were focused. We could have done this. Well, you know, as God would have it, we turn around at that point in time, and about 1,500 feet down below us, there is another climbing party that has crossed through a section where we have already been. Unfortunately for them, this is in an ice field and a rock formation near Disappointment Cleaver. Unfortunately for them, a giant rock fall took place and hit three of their climbers. Actually, one was a guide, had his scapula shattered. Another lady had her leg hurt. Another guy was knocked off of the path and into a ravine, busted pelvis. We got down 1,500 feet below. Our guides went to help the guy who was in the ravine still. We went down to where that group had tented before they attempted their summit. we met one of the other guys, the one who had his scapula busted, and he pulled us together. He said, look, we're going to need to bring a helicopter in here. We need you guys to work with us to make this pad. And we created a 12-foot by 9-foot pad in the mountainside. Now, remind you, this is a mountain. It's got a grade, and we had to dig into the mountainside. Now, there's plenty of snow, but we had to create essentially a level 9-foot by 12-foot snow landing place for this helicopter to land to rescue these hurt hikers. Now, folks, if we had summited, if we had gone on our way and crossed the crevasse, we would not have been there to help them. And in fact, we did dig the platform. Helicopter came not long after that, airlifted the guy out of the ravine with a ranger hanging from the bottom of a helicopter, bringing a basket with him, lowering it down into the ravine, and then putting him in the basket, taking him out and taking him away. The helicopter came back and picked up the other two hikers on that platform. So, you know, climbing a mountain doesn't always mean summiting. And like anything in life, it's just exciting to make the attempt and to give it your best shot. Sometimes we feel like we're going to run out of breath and we're not going to be able to get across whatever it is that mountain is for us that we need to climb. Maybe that's a move for you. Maybe that's downsizing for you. Maybe that's trying to decide what the next step is in your life. Just remember that there are crevasses that we must cross, and sometimes we have to turn around, regroup, and come again, and that's okay. And sometimes when we get turned around, it's for a good reason, to help somebody else, like we helped those people down below us. You know, the Lord has a way of protecting us, keeping us safe, and I certainly learned that lesson this summer when climbing Mount Rainier. Well, not much real estate in that segment, but I hope you enjoyed the story. Helen Flynn, Stuart Rosenthal, and more on Senior Solutions straight ahead. I'm Eric Stewart, pointing you home. Don't go away.
The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.